Hi, this is Dylan Hintz, president of the Future Filmmakers Club at Salisbury University, a club dedicated to creating a community of creativity for the Salisbury area. We study film, we talk about film, we make film, and we have a lot of fun doing it. This is our first podcast, and it's about The Dark Knight and how it's been recently pushed to get a nomination for the 2009 Oscars. Here it goes.
Okay.
This thing's working.
What I'd like to do is I'd like to just have like a brief discussion if people could come in a little bit closer so I know the mic works. This is just something that I want to put up on our YouTube page and on our Facebook page as like a podcast. And we've got a lot of different people with a lot of different knowledge aspects of what this film is. And you can come up too. Of what they think about this movie and things like that. We've got people that are, you know, they know about comic books and they know about the background history. We've got people that, you know, love movies and screenwriting and people that are filmmakers and crazy people and, you know, people that love genre films and things of that nature. And we've also got a very academic mindset here with Dr. Michael Mader, the club's academic sponsor. So I'd like to just start off saying this is a... This is a podcast, some sort of recording in response to a recent development where a website came out called The Dark Campaign, which is campaigning to put The Dark Knight into the Best Picture nomination for the 2009 Oscars. That's a pretty lofty idea considering it's a movie based on a comic book. I don't think that's ever happened before except maybe with a history of violence, but that's a different type of comic book altogether. No one wears bat ears in that. Regardless of that, I just think it's really interesting for this to be such a big deal. The movie made like $500 million or something in the last 3 months. In the first 3 months that it came out, it broke all box office records except for Titanic, which was a Best Picture film and was also known as not being like the best written thing ever. But, you know, its scope was just epic, which is kind of like the same thing with this film, although the writing is arguably better. So, does a film like, well, does a Batman film deserve to win Best Picture? Let's just put it right there. We'll start going around. Let's open it up to Tom. Tom, what are your first thoughts on this?
I think it absolutely deserves to at least be on the nominee list. Maybe, I mean, I can't say I've seen all the movies that have come out this year, but so I don't know if it necessarily deserves to win Best Picture, but definitely nominated as one.
Just because it like reached so many people.
Pretty much.
In such a strong way.
Oh yeah, and just because it is a comic book movie, but not only that. Unlike other comic book movies, I feel it probably goes a lot deeper, genre wise, you know, narratively, and even the way it was directed, story wise, than any other movie of its kind.
In terms of like pure structure. Have you seen the film yet?
I haven't, but I mean, I have some opinions about it. I mean, I think that Nolan elevated the material to a new level, and we've been talking about the fact that it's, a comic book material, but I think it's, as I said, it's been elevated to a new level, so I think it deserves to be nominated. I mean, we can go back and look, and I believe Star Wars was nominated as a Best Picture, wasn't it?
The original?
Yeah, the original was, and I think an even better example is in 1976, Rocky was the Best Picture, and it's really a fairy tale. And so I think that this certainly, you know, deserves consideration because he's done something new with the character and taken it to this more serious level, you know, and that it is kind of, you know, this epic kind of story in like a Shakespearean tradition.
So are you for it possibly winning or just for at least a nomination?
Well, I mean, I come from, you know, this background of being interested in, science fiction and action and heroic films and have always sort of dealt with the fact that they have been, sort of second-class, kind of considered second-class motion pictures. So I think if, all things being considered, I don't think that it being a genre film should be held against it. And if it deserves to win, it should win.
And especially like, for instance, last year, the Oscars were dominated by a genre film, No Country for Old Men, which also had a antagonist who decided to flip coins and kill people depending on the outcome.
And I think that, well, the Coen brothers in that film sort of take that genre and that material to a new level. It has a seriousness to it. And so I think it certainly deserved to be nominated.
Mike, do you have any thoughts on it?
Well, I think it's a movie. It is a movie just like any other out there. So if a movie is made of such great scale and reaches such a great market, it doesn't even matter if it's a superhero film, or it shouldn't matter. It should be considered either way, because it's Best Picture. It's not Best Picture in this certain category. Best Picture means Best Picture all around. So I think it definitely deserves a nomination. I haven't seen like a lot of movies this year, so I can't really say if it would win. It would get my vote just because I saw it and I loved it. And like, it's one of the movies that I can think of like when I know a movie's good, it's when I pay attention and focus the entire time. Like, I could feel my heartbeat during this movie.
Yeah.
It was that thrilling, and I just like there were moments that just like really just gave me chills. So I think it deserves to have the nomination just as much as any other movie.
Absolutely. So back to Dr. Mader.
There's sort of been this paradox in Hollywood where, you know, the whole impetus behind making motion pictures is to make money. But then if you have a wildly successful film, then that's sort of held against it. And, oh, it's too commercial. We can't nominate it for Best Picture. And I think that's changing a little bit. But I don't think that a motion picture success should be held against it when they're deciding who wins the Oscars. So I don't think that, I think its success should be considered as a part of it. And, yeah, I think it deserves to be nominated.
It seems like the whole money issue has
kind of balanced out over the last couple of years as well. I mean, The Departed was incredibly successful in theaters. It was like the most successful rated R movie probably since like the first or second Matrix. And out of all the like more independent films of the last year, No Country for Old Men was definitely the most money-making one, definitely further than There Will Be Blood. And then, of course, you have Titanic, which we mentioned before, which is the greatest money-making film of all time, and they didn't even deny that. So, I mean, maybe that'll be Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings: Return of the King also made like a bunch of money,
Best Picture.
And that one, Best Picture,
that could definitely be related.
And that would be the most recent, like, real hardcore genre film, with fantasy elements in it that had won something like that. So if that could win, why can't The Dark Knight? Do you want to go, James, real quick?
Yeah, I'll get that one.
I was going to say that it certainly does deserve to be nominated, at least, considering the movie selection we had this year, which, well, one big thing it did this whole year was comic book movies and superhero movies have moved so much more into mainstream than before now. I mean, we had Iron Man, the Hulk, Hancock,
The Punisher.
I mean, this year there's just been a ton of hero movies. Max Payne, technically, although that was just as god-awful.
Yeah.
But out of all of them, it was the best. It was the best written. I still say the ending's a little questionable.
Yeah.
I still hate the fact that I'm Batman.
Yeah.
But if it were to win, it would be a big victory in the fact that the more heroic, much like mentioned earlier, the much more heroic movies, the more not necessarily being a little bit of hope, I almost want to say, because when you look at a hero, even Batman the Dark Knight, the heroic elements come through even in dark stuff.
Yeah.
And if that happens, because look at just about every movie that's ever won in the past 10 years or so. They've all been dark, depressing.
Well, aside from Lord of the Rings itself.
Yeah. That's true, but
Return of the King is like triumphing over all evil. So
yeah, but it still has a bittersweet ending.
Okay, yeah.
It's always completely bittersweet. You're not sure if good is won. It's
unlike what Dr. Mader was saying about like Rocky, for instance, which is just like a super uplift.
Like that, we haven't had something like that in a long time. I mean, it doesn't happen very often. The people who nominate, they have such painfully strict standards for liking anything. Mm-hmm. If it's not controversial and dark and makes you feel like you want to kill yourself, it's not worth voting for.
Or high culture,
The high culture element.
Culture is high culture. That's the thing. It's so intertwined, especially in our upcoming generation. We wouldn't exist without it.
Maybe jumping around a little bit, but everyone keeps saying how, as far as genre goes, it's a comic book movie, and I think people are really forgetting that as far as things go, comic books aren't really necessarily only for little kids. And I thought that like Alan Moore did something with that with V for Vendetta and with Watchmen and everything like that. And he actually fought for that. And he wasn't one of the people that went out for commercial success or anything. When his movies went out, he was actually against it. He did not want that kind of thing to be out there. He wanted this thing to be out there to teach people a moral lesson and show people value, give them a good story, and, you know, teach them about man and his moral, you know, like his morality. And when it comes to The Dark Knight, they did the same thing with that. It took the typical protagonist, put him up against an antagonist, but it kind of cleared things up, or kind of like made things a little more ambiguous with who was actually the good guy, who was actually the bad guy, who actually... It took a big shot at the gray area. It did not go black and white like typical comic book films do, and that's one of the things I can say, that it may not be entirely a comic book film. Yes, it is based off a comic book character. Yes, it does take into account a lot of things from the comic book. It is very, very, well, it was pretty accurate. Not the most accurate thing in the world, but it's pretty accurate. But Christopher Nolan actually jumped ahead with it, and his filmmaking was actually, his directing was really well done on it. It made it more than just a comic book movie, in my opinion. So.
And what you said reminded me of, in 1992 with Clint Eastwood and Unforgiven, where he took the Western and raised it to a new level and did a lot of the things that you're talking about with the Western genre, and I think that that's what Nolan did here, so I think it bolsters our argument even more.
Well, it's also the same thing, like, comic book movies now are, like, getting so deep into their own history that it is moving away, like, I think they were talking about, like, how in the old Batman movies, you know, Jack Nicholson was mad that he couldn't come back to do the Joker, but that's not what they wanted. They didn't want that style of Joker anymore. And when they brought in the more archaic one, you know, the Heath Ledger Joker, everything became more dark, because now we have a villain who has absolutely no rules at all, and they really explored that, and that's what makes the movie deep, and that's what makes it, like... That just makes it feel so much more different, so much more powerful, is because you have a villain who's not constrained by anything. He has no real family to speak of or anything like that. He's just an insane psychopath. And I think the writing in the movie really reflected that, like, how do you defeat this guy? He has no weakness, basically. So I just think comic book, especially this movie, like Gotham, for example, in the first Batman Begins, Gotham had like the giant railroad system, and it looked a lot more, you know, comic booky. This one, you didn't see any of that. Like, it was just a blatant city, and there was nothing Gotham specific, like the Wayne Tower or mansion was gone. So it didn't even feel like you were in a comic book movie. It felt like a really dark, depressive city. Yeah, exactly.
That's one thing that actually bothered me about it, because I watched Batman Begins right before I saw The Dark Knight, and I was thinking, what happened to this cool city? I liked that the railway and all that stuff, all the neat architecture. Mm-hmm. Then I saw this, I'm like, this is just Chicago. Exactly. You know, it just, that's what it looked like.
Well, yeah, you know what? And actually, I did first think of that when I watched it through. I'm like, what in the world happened to the rail? Because, well, for me, I like continuity. So when I see big continuity errors like that, like, where'd the whole railroad system go? Like, but then the more I watch it, though, or the more I've seen it, it's just like they didn't need that. Gotham wasn't their focus, really. It was just the people in Gotham. So they didn't really need to put so much care into the city anymore. And I think that's what they even talked about. They kind of cleaned up Gotham more, because it's been a year since the movie, so it's not as, like, filled with trash as it used to be.
That's even kind of part of, like, the plot itself, is that...
You know, Gotham's become a cleaner place. It's the crime rate's going down. All the bad guys are scared. I guess that the Mizen scene and the setting kind of does reflect that kind of attitude, that it's finally becoming like a normal city once again. Right. And then I suppose it does kind of help. Like, I agree with you fully. I love the old Batman films. I love how the Gotham City architecture used to be so specific to the movies themselves. But what I think makes the movie as powerful as it is that it takes a world that looks like our world, and then shows all those people trying to run the hell out of it, trying to escape it. They're all terrified. It shows our traffic jams. It shows our fears. It shows this, it's a weird thing to say, but it's this very 9/11 styled film. And they had the balls to make it. And when something like World Trade Center doesn't win an Oscar, if this does, it's going to be pretty much saying this is the most popular reimagining of how people felt during that kind of time period that's ever come out, that people have been willing to swallow down. You know, back even when the first
movie to really get affected by that was the first Spider-Man film that starred this whole superhero genre thing, and they took out a scene where he's on the World Trade Center towers because people would feel weird about that. We cut to 7 years later, and this movie makes the whole idea so not just tolerable, but accessible, and it shows us our own fears right back at us with a character like the Joker, and it shows us like our political protagonists like Batman is reference in some ways to be George Bush, and also just our government going out there trying to like break the rules to save society, but only having so many on a thin line. Well, you know, back to what I was saying though, it's reflected in that scenery, but I do agree with you that it's not Batman, but it still works for whatever reason. It still works. You got anything? Anybody else? Yeah,
I will say. We'll say one last thing. Chris has mentioned it earlier about how people usually take these movies lower because they're a comic book movie. People take movies that are based off books, and they're like, "Oh, how wonderful! They're making a movie based on a book, or it's based off a play. How great!" But these aren't even comic book movies anymore. They're taking ideas from comics. Every idea is taken from somewhere else. Nothing's original.
Right.
Let's just face it. That's how the world is. But it's very much a double standard, and once people get past that, great movies that are just completely neglected and ignored can start being recognized for what they are. Fine pieces of film instead of, oh, it's just another one of those movies.
So, I mean, you're saying that something like The Dark Knight could even kind of start like its own art movement where it makes some certain forms of art more accessible and more acceptable within the genre system of filmmaking.
Yeah, I'm saying that almost exactly. And think about it. When the awards are won, like I was saying earlier, it's always dark movies, but it's always a drama. Yeah. And Dark Knight is very dramatic, but it's also a lot of action, kind of a sci-fi-ish thing with the technology. It's a hero movie.
Not just comic book, like hero specifically.
Yeah.
Okay. I was just saying how you're saying how people are starting to take it more seriously. I was just thinking about how this is definitely, you know, probably the first movie that has really, you know,
it's taken it up
given some validity to the comic book genre, definitely. I definitely think this is one of the, probably the best.
They're good comic book movies, but they don't quite take it to a scale like this where so many people can relate.
Yeah.
But what do you think really brings in that validity?
It's more on like a filmic scale. Like people, you know, most other comic movies are trying to appeal to the comic, you know, fans and appeal that have read it, but this is more taking it to the next level, making it, you know, just
through like filmic and cinematic elements, you mean?
Yeah, using elements of film, not trying to just appease, you know, the fanboys basically.
Like,
yeah.
Villain stories and things like that.
Yeah.
Okay. I have to agree with that, and also one thing Nolan did with his Batman universe was he, instead of going with the same squeaky clean kind of comic book world where it's already prefabricated by the comic books beforehand, because I've read a lot of them, I can draw parallels between tons. Nolan created a newer Batman that, like you said earlier, it's kind of a 9/11-y feel. They did everything they could to make it feel like one of these days a masked vigilante wielding some weird stuff could actually start doing this. This seems wholly feasible. This doesn't seem like the Batmobile and Batarangs and the Bat Laser and the Bat Machine.
Even with the terrible
grappling
vision at the end of the movie.
Even that's technically possible. That is real technology. It's just extremely expensive.
Well, at least he has the money for it.
Yes.
Okay.
Maybe jumping back a little bit here. But when it comes to maybe this movie, how you said, Dylan, that possibly, you know, how you were just commenting, saying it could be, you know, like making more art, artistic things more accessible, especially when it comes to like the comic book genre and things like that. That's actually kind of connected to Batman himself, like the character, the comic, and everything like that. When Batman came out, it was one of the many, many comic books that actually made comic books more acceptable to be read by adults. I mean, it was more of a thing that could be thought of in an adult way. It wasn't just like, oh, you know, let's go out down to the store, pay 10 cents, you know, buy my kid something to read. It was like, you know, they would walk by, see their kid reading it, and say, I'm kind of interested and I'm going to read this, and it made it more accessible to them. So in public, they didn't look like such idiots for reading these child things. It actually delved in some interesting things, and I just find that interesting. That's kind of connected in that way, that this movie may very well do that.
That because of its old pattern of making itself accessible to the popular medium, like the character is so iconic to not only children but adults, you're saying that the film is like walking in its own footsteps in a way.
Sort of, and I was just sort of just pointing that out. I mean, it was just something I noticed, and it was kind of interesting.
Well, yeah, relating to that, like, I agree, because this movie has definitely, you know, opened up the comic book medium, you know, once again. Because I know people who I've talked to, like, over the summer when the movie just came out, who 5 years ago would not be caught dead reading a comic book. Now they're actually going, like, online or going to the bookstore and actually reading old Batman, Iron Man, you know, like Sin City, you name it, you know, visual novels or comic books, you know, from 50, you know,
because
30 years ago.
Movies have influenced.
Yeah, because they want to, you know, learn more about it, and they actually want to understand it more.
Yeah,
I mean,
because they realize now that it's not, as we were saying from the very beginning, it's not just for kids; it's for adults, and a lot of these, you know, comic books and you know, things actually try to explore deeper themes. I mean, some don't, but a lot of them do, and they never knew that, and they're just discovering that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did. After I saw The Dark Knight, I went back, started reading stuff like The Killing Joke and The Long Halloween, stuff like that, just because this got me so interested in Batman, because I, you know, never really read it. I just kind of grew up with the now campy-seeming, you know, movies.
Campy, but great.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, except Batman and Robin.
Except for Batman and Robin, yeah.
Well, and also too, the movie's more accessible because this isn't just a movie that, you know, that people who have read the comics can enjoy. I, for one, have never read a single Batman comic. I've never read it. I've never actually liked DC, really, because I always thought their superheroes were kind of stupid. But then I saw, and Batman Begins was still okay, but I was like, eh. And then when I saw this movie, it just like completely reversed everything I had thought. Like, it really did, because then Like I said, I was sitting there just amazed, and I'm just like, wow, I really like Batman now. And but also too, what we were saying about like the whole different time, like the how they're getting deeper. I remember also going back to the Jack Nicholson thing, like the older Joker, like he was done in the way of the comic book, more like the comic books, where he was kind of more cartoonish than anything, and that's. That also appeals to the time period, because I remember, I think whoever directed it, I think it was Peter Jackson, or Tim Burton, yeah. Right. And he said, like, that's just how comic book movies were at that time. If people had even started thinking of a movie like this, you know, producers probably would have, like, laughed at him or something like that, because they'd be like, are you kidding me? This is Batman. Nobody wants to see that. Nobody wants to see the Joker, like, you know, doing all this.
Like dancing around
like crazy, you know, and challenging the whole idea of Batman. No, Batman's a superhero. He is a superhero, therefore he's going to be a hero.
Right.
Here, he's not, he is a superhero, but is he exactly a hero? That's what the movie challenges. And they actually, in a way, they make him, like, not really the hero.
Yeah, and even Christian Bale, in an interview, told people that he didn't believe Batman was a superhero, that he actually said, no, Batman's just a guy trying to do what's right, but that doesn't make him a superhero. He's just, you know, a guy running around fighting people.
Well, going on what I was saying, one thing that is interesting is the fact that he's talking about how this Joker is different and everything, but it's kind of interesting to see that, how it got him interested. This movie actually changed the way the comics portray the Joker. Now the Joker does have cuts like this. Like the big smile, and he's crazier and a little more unhinged, and he's more challenging the idea of Batman because they set up an event that made him parallel the Heath Ledger Joker.
Well, and actually, too, to more add to that point, there's a new Batman video game coming out, Arkham Asylum. They also use Joker, and it's also done in a much darker style than previous like Batman video games. It's not the same. Like, he's still dressed up in the older outfit. But he looks, from what I've seen, he looks just as dark and crazy. So it is kind of reflecting how much this Joker has made an impact.
So, I mean, before we get into anything else, we've already discussed how the film is very, it's become an accessible form of the medium. It's become this new wave of comic book films, and it's introduced the idea that they can be accessible to adults, children,
well, hopefully not too young, because I know kids would get scared to death by this Heath Ledger Joker.
Fear of clowns forever.
Yeah, fear of clowns forever. But it's also the reason that it's become so accessible and so well-known is because of how powerful it is. And when you're talking about things like the Joker and his new makeup and how scary that is and how it's like this revisionist version of it, like Dr. Mader was saying about the Unforgiven films and their revisionist styles, I think that's what adds to the power. Like we said, like the scenery adds to the power because it's more real, and the Joker adds to its power because it's more real. But it's real in a way that's like our worst nightmare, our worst society's nightmare, that somebody's just going to come out and ruin everything for us and apparently look really cool while doing it, you know, and become the face of Hot Topic, which I don't know. I mean, I've never heard of a Muslim terrorist becoming like the face of Hot Topic, but I mean,
could happen. Well, the Joker in this is – the Joker in the movie is completely feasible. Someone who's really intelligent and really unhinged could really do this. They could just – plan things ahead this far and devote their life to this kind of chaos.
Dear God in heaven, hope that doesn't happen.
Yes.
Are you
going
to
say anything?
No.
I thought you were up. Okay.
Well, I will say this. I mean, especially, it's definitely helping the industry make all sorts of money in terms of, I mean, if you look at the new, you know, Watchmen movie that's coming out, you know, that's based, that's an adaptation of the graphic novel. Just, yeah, okay, enough of that. But anyway, just the thought of hearing that about this movie coming out soon has already made countless amount of people rush to the bookstore just to buy the graphic novel, to read it before the movie comes out. And I mean, yeah, I mean, I've never even heard of this movie, this graphic novel before, you know, seeing the previews for it.
Something like Watchmen isn't really the kind of thing that's very mainstream, but if it wasn't for something like The Dark Knight, we might not ever see an adaptation of it.
And now I find myself reading them too, just because I want to read it before it comes out.
Personally, after hearing all this, like, I think it's actually pretty safe to say that like a nomination for the movie itself, based around what everyone could possibly say, the people who have never read the comic, people who have picked up the comic beforehand, people who have ran to the stores after seeing the movie to pick up the comic, everything like that, I think it's pretty safe to say that the film itself has had more of an impact. It allowed reversals. I mean, it influenced the comic itself that it was based upon. It was strong enough to do that. It was strong enough to fight the current back and turn around. It was strong enough to influence other types of medium. It was strong enough to make it accessible to other people. And it was a strong film. And I think that would be part of the reason why, out of everything that everyone said, and again, this might be jumping forward a little bit. It might be out of the order here. But it might actually be proof enough to say that it's good enough for a nomination, at least, if not, you know, winning for the year.
Well, I think it'll definitely get nominated, just if not to just appease, you know, enough people that want to get nominated. Because, like, you know, if you have websites like this, and even, like, we were watching the video and has all these critical quotes about, you know, how great the movie is. But you can also say that about, you know, with any movie. You can find glowing, you know, reviews about anything. You probably get that with Twilight, you know. But, yeah, they're obviously, yeah, they're picking and choosing, you know, their quotes. But I think it will definitely at least get the nomination because it is impactful. But there probably are far more impactful to society, you know, films coming out. Like, you know, Milk, you know, something like that.
There's always something.
But see, if that's the only one we can think about, if the only other one we can think about is Milk, which is, you know, another movie that's like with the whole Proposition 8 thing coming out and everything, everybody's going to go nuts about that. And then the Oscars are going to be looked at as like, you know, you guys made a mistake during the whole Brokeback Mountain thing. I think you owe us something. You never know if that's going to happen.
They're always about politics.
Yeah, I mean, the Oscars are very politically charged.
Why do
you
think Crash won?
Well, I think Crash won because they weren't ready to do the Brokeback Mountain thing, and that's probably going to be the buzz about Milk.
Because I felt, and I can't remember for the life of me what else came out, but I'm pretty sure there were movies out there that looked like they might have even deserved it more than any other.
Well, that was definitely like the most indie year the Oscars had ever had up at that point.
Don't get me wrong, I actually did like Crash, but I mean, I did question, you know, what it was doing, you know, being, you know, nominated Best Picture and then actually winning.
Yeah.
Like, well, and what we were saying that there might be something more impactful, it's like, it goes back to the old phrase, there's always a bigger fish. Like, there's always something that's going to be in the future. Like, when Titanic won 11 Oscars people were like, wow, nobody's ever going to meet that. And then, years later, we have Lord of the Rings Return of the King that matched Titanic's amount of wins. And if you watch Return of the King, you can't really deny that it didn't deserve. You can't really say that it didn't deserve any of those Oscars. I mean,
make up for like the Two Towers and the Fellowship. Not win. I mean, Fellowship could have won when it first came out. What won that year? Was that the year with Crash? And, no, it wasn't.
But the whole thing is like you just can't. Like you may not personally. Sometimes you might not personally like a film. There are films that I don't like, but I can certainly appreciate why they're held in such respect. So, and that can be, and that's also Return of the King. So, there's always some movie that might be out there, but that's not saying Dark Knight doesn't stand a chance. Just because the movie hasn't come out, that doesn't mean that, you know, it's out of the running. Sure, something might be more impactful. We don't know that right now. So, as it stands, Dark Knight still has a decent shot, and that's what the whole Oscars is. It's a battle for the best of the best. And people just have to decide what they like better, really.
Before we I want to start wrapping this up, but could we just each kind of talk about one moment in the film, one scene? I know this doesn't really apply to Dr. Mater, but, you know, that we think makes the movie possibly Oscar-worthy. I'm going to go out there and say for my choice, you know, get back to me, but does anybody have one, like, right off the bat? There's no scene that really clear, at least for the nomination, some scene that makes this movie go above and beyond, like, what it could be. No one?
Well,
wow, we're in trouble here.
I think off the top of my head what the best scene would be, but a lot of the really dramatic scenes with Harvey Dent, especially towards the end, when he was getting really, really, like, you know,
more violent.
Oh, yeah, and serious and just kind of, like, stressed out over everything and determined to solve, you know, and to save Gotham City from the Joker and the chaos that he had, you know, plunged the city in, and just showing how he was just going over edge and starting to, you know, bend the rules just to get what he wanted.
Well, when the White Nine Society starts breaking his own rules, like when he threatens a criminal to the death in order to propagate.
The, you know, the assassination attempt of the mayor it was, right? Or was it the police?
Yeah, Commissioner Gordon.
Right.
Mayor.
I mean, that just showed, wow. I mean, you can just see it in the, you know, in his eyes, just, you know, just sort of the crossover from how he was in the beginning to this just monster.
Before he even gets the makeup.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I think the biggest, like, most impactful part of that movie for me, like, it's a small part. It's not an epic scene. It's a really small part, but it's at the end where, you know, Harvey has Gordon's kid, and Gordon's on the ground defenseless. Batman's been shot, you know, and then Harvey says to Gordon, "Tell your boy it's going to be all right. Lie like I had to lie." Just like, you know, so it just hits you because then he actually says, then he's like, "It's going to be okay." Okay, and for me, I don't know if that affected any of you guys, but I know for me, that just, like, really, that sent chills down me. Not only, 'cause, I mean, that's just, like, that's like you're sensing your kid, really. Really, if you think, in his mind, or at least it would be, it's like sentencing his kid to death. And that just, like, that just really makes you think, 'cause he's such a good character. He's the one, like, shining light in this whole film, Gordon. Is really beyond Harvey Dent being like the White Knight. Gordon is really the shining light in this whole film because he's the only one who stays true to his character the entire time. Well, true to being good, really. Yeah. And
the other thing, I think you're right. That one line, that one little bit, even though it's at the part where most people see the movie is kind of starting to go downhill, that one part really does still stick out as a great moment in the film. I agree. And I think when you have the character saying words like that, tell your son it's going to be all right, tell everything's going to be okay, I think that's really important because that's like a reflection of the current language that the entire world's under. We're all seeing things go downhill. The economy's going downhill. All we want to do is be able to tell our children that things are going to be okay, and they're not unless somebody really fixes it. Unless that Batman guy gets up out of the corner and knocks this guy off the side of the building, things aren't going to be okay, and we know it. But that's like – the mindset of society right now.
Going to the scenes, and, you know, the scene that maybe possibly might prove that this is the you know, a nomination, this is worthy of a nomination or winning. It's an odd scene, and it's at the very beginning. Well, it's almost at the very beginning, but I believe it's probably one of the first scenes to actually show the whole entire theme of the movie, which would prove.
But when there's copies of Batman, when there are innocent civilians, and this doesn't even have to have to do with the Joker or Harvey Dent. There's no antagonist here. There's no real, you know, master villain here at all. But when there's copies of Batman, innocent civilians who just saw his idea and copied it and said, you know what, I'm tired of this. And they, you know, just try to do something about it. And he puts them in their place, and they're like, what makes us, you know, any different from you? What makes you better? You know, what? Why can you do this and we can't? And I think that just kind of emphasizes the consequences of a hero. It emphasizes the consequences of the hero and his ideology and everything that he possibly do. And that's probably one of the first things that it ever does in that whole entire movie is show you that there's consequences to this. There's a problem. It's not all, you know, fancy, and it's not the greatest thing in the world. And I think that alone, you know, contradicting something so like some idea that's that great deserves to put it up there.
It lifts it above its own genre in that way with the whole vigilante issue. It's like in the original Death Wish, I think, when Charles Bronson is like the vigilante specifically, and then like the old woman with the bobby pin in the purse starts like beating up her attacker. It's that kind of effect, but they do show a negative consequence to it. And because of that, it really reveals the whole superhero genre for like the kind of danger it could present to young minds, but also the kind of hope that it also inspires.
But I think one of the most important themes that I've noticed in the movie, and one of the reasons why it does deserve a Best Picture nomination, is just the idea of how, you know, like how far is a peaceful man willing to go to ensure peace? I mean, are they willing to resort to violence and to jeopardize their lives and their, you know, loved ones' lives to ensure that peace? And I think this movie really, you know, puts that into perspective, because that's our world for you. It's so realistic to me.
It's almost, and I know this would be like a joke probably just between the two of us, maybe Dr. Mayer, but it's almost like it's the straw dogs of the superhero film.
It could be, yeah. It definitely could be.
Bear trap!
I know this is an odder connection, but I kind of liken it to actually 24. 24, because in this movie, there are so many like moral choices that all the characters make, and that's what 24 always thrived on. They always thrived on like Jack choosing this person's life over this person, or you know, or they have some character, you know, sacrifice themselves for the safety of others. And that's basically what Thomas was saying. You know, people, they're like, do you sacrifice your own family or whatever he was.
Your safety.
Yeah, right, exactly. Exactly. And that's what, you know, that's what they were doing. They were making choices. Gordon, you know, and Gordon was trapped by the villain who's forcing him to make, you know, a terrible choice. And it's just, the whole style and theme just seems to, like, keep rounding nowadays, especially following 9/11. Because one thing that the Bush administration always says is terrorists, like, they don't differentiate between civilian and military targets. So basically everybody's in danger. And that's what the movie exemplifies. Everybody's at risk. Because that's what terrorists do. They slip into any part of the world, and then they can just come out of nowhere and just instantly cause mass death. And that's basically what the Joker did. He slipped in unnoticed, and then suddenly he causes all this chaos, and then suddenly everybody's panicking, and they don't know what to do. And I just, throughout the whole movie, I just always thought of 24, because it just seemed, you know, like that.
Anybody else offer anything? Okay, one more back over to Tom, and then we'll try and start wrapping this up.
So yeah, like what you were saying, it's like basically the Joker's just, he's testing, you know, people's willingness to, you know,
to snap.
Pretty much. Also, like, how much are they willing to stay in their, you know, their structured civilization? You know, how much are they willing to give to keep it, you know, from crumbling?
Yeah, like the one scene where everybody starts like killing because the Joker tells them to, pretty just much. To protect their own skins.
Because they're scared and they don't know what to do.
Well, he's testing all the old standbys. He's testing the standby of a regular hero. Like, even just thinking beyond just the movie itself, he's testing the standby of a hero, that a hero is not always flawless, but he's, like, more perfect than everybody else, and that he always gets through it, and that there's always, like, you know, some sort of celebration of happiness at the end, because everything's okay, because the hero came in and solved it.
Yeah.
At the end of this movie, everything's not okay. Everything has been twisted so much that it's not okay, and the hero doesn't walk away, you know, all strong and confident. He's chased away, and I think that just shows how society is also changing the view of a hero. hero. And just like in 24, Jack Bauer is never a hero who gets to just walk away. Walk away. He's tortured. He's chased away. He's locked up. So I think society is more lending to that type of hero because it just challenges the old standbys.
What you were saying there about the flawed aspect of his character, I mean, it reflects the postmodern world that we're living in, and I think that the reason his character is why it appeals to people is because it reflects kind of the fallen world of the postmodern world that we're living in, and we sort of want to kind of tear down icons and sort of bring them to our level. It's almost the same argument why reality TV is popular, and I think that Nolan has really tapped into the psyche in America now, the post 9/11 postmodern world, and he has captured its essence in this film, and its popularity reflects that. And I think that he did that so well that again we have to go back to the thing that it deserves a nomination.
So I'm just going to wrap this up, bring this down, lock it up. I believe that we've all pretty much agreed, yes, I see nodding heads everywhere, that if this movie is what it is, then it really does deserve at least a nomination. Nothing else that's come out within the last year has hit people so much and so hard that they've had to decide about it. And even throughout this whole discussion, not a single one of us brought up the whole, Heath Ledger died, that makes it a great movie thing. That alone shows that there is more value to this movie than the controversy surrounding its development and the popular culture that surrounded its popularity, that we actually became ingrained in what story it was telling, not just the stories behind it. And I think that just as a closing remark, I believe personally that when you come to question something, that is truly what shows the measure of its value. And honestly, that if we are here raising the question, should this film be nominated, then yes, it should be nominated. If that's what it comes down to, then yes, the answer is 100% yes. So I'd like to thank you all for your time. This has been our first podcast as Future Filmmakers, and we're all signing off. Dylan Hintz, Thomas England, Chris Snyder, Dr. Michael Mader, Mike Woodard, and Travis Carr, James Hal has left the building already. Thank you and good night.
You can find out more about the Salisbury University Future Filmmakers Club at www.strikeaposefilms.com or go to our Facebook and look us up there. We also have a YouTube page, Future Filmmakers SU, and our email address is futurefilmmakerssu@gmail.com. Meetings are every Thursday at 7 o'clock in the TTC building, Room 252.